You run as hard as you can, knowing the distance. That's all running is.
Dizwins Radio, episode 573, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today's episode of the show, no sponsor today, and I'm not even going to plug any of my own stuff today. Just want to do a couple of quick things. First and foremost, thank you obviously for listening to the show. I pretty much am, I think I'm consistent at doing that at the end of every episode, but I know that not all of you make it all the way to the end of every episode. So for those of you that don't, please know that I appreciate you at least pressing start, at least pressing play to listen to the first part of the episode. And, you know, maybe when we start wrapping things up and I start giving my takeaways, you sign off. But thank you for listening and you know, doing what you do, telling people about it, sharing the show, writing about it on your blogs, promoting it on social media, sharing it on social media. All of those shout outs, all those mentions mean a lot. So thank you for doing that. Other announcement, update or whatever piece of news that I want to share is there's a little bit of a overhaul of the website going on. It's a slow process. It's a tedious process because it's a process that I'm doing on top of everything else, as if I needed one other thing to add to my my list of things to try to get done. But if you haven't checked out the website in a while, you know, when you have a chance, if you want to bum over to it, check it out and let me know what you think. Like I said, it's not all completely updated yet. There's actually, and you know, as this episode gets released, more of it is probably, you know, old and not updated than it is actually what it is updated. But one of the pages that is brand new off the presses and I would love to get your feedback on is the About Me page, kind of a little bit more about me, because I believe that the old page hadn't been updated in like 4 years. So it was saying like, you know, we have a brand new baby in the house. Well, the brand new baby is about to turn 4. So maybe it was time to update that joker a little bit. And so I did that. So if you want to check it out, and again, would love your feedback, dizruns.com/about. Get a little bit more about me, find out where Diz came from to begin with. You know, some of the show history, whole nine yards. Check it out. Feedback, always appreciated. And for now, enough about that, right? Let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, fun fact about today's guest. He's been running marathons longer than I have been alive. So let that sink in for just a minute. In total, at this point, he's run somewhere over 300 marathons, but you know, who's counting at this point? He's also an official 50-state marathoner and has also run several international races along the way. And in case you're curious, yes, he is still running at this point in his life as well. So anyway, I'm sure we're going to get some great stories today from none other than Mr. Chuck Van Dusy. Thanks for joining us today, Chuck. Really appreciate it. And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, certainly. The pleasure is mine. Guys, you know, let's call a spade. Chuck doesn't have much for social media, websites, anything like that. So there's nothing to point you to get in touch with him, but we will have show notes for today, just like we always do. And if you want to check those out, some notes and some photos and things like that from you know, Chuck's running career, dizruns.com/573 is the link to get you there. So Chuck, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple question that I kind of think I actually might have an idea of what your answer is going to be. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And for some runners, it's actually kind of or some folks that I talk to, it's kind of a difficult question to answer, even though it's an easy one for me to ask. And that's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I started running at 40 and only ran 5Ks and 10Ks. Up in Rochester, New York, on Lake Ontario, we didn't even have half marathons 40 years ago. There were a couple, but infrequently. So we just did 5 and 10 Ks. Then I ran into some guys that were running marathons. And in those days, Rochester had a Lake Ontario marathon, which ran out along 13 miles Lake Ontario and then turned around and came back. And also had a – and that was flat, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. And then we also had – and that was in June. And then September we had the Rochester Marathon, which ran into all of the small towns around Rochester, started and finished in Rochester. So I had heard that some of my buddies had done the Lake Ontario Marathon. So I signed up and ran that and didn't run again for a week. My quads just were throbbing. I didn't know anything about training or hadn't even run into many guys that I could run with every day, which is something that I very seldom do and haven't done for 40 years, run without people. So I did the marathon and then I thought, oh my God, this is nothing I would ever do again. But then within a couple of days, as I know all of you that have run marathons, you start to think, well, maybe if I had, you know, run a little bit more before the marathon, or if I had not got to 20 miles as quickly as I did, so maybe I'll try one again. So the marathon, obviously, then is my favorite distance. The reason, if I might keep going, is the anything shorter than that, if you think about it, a half marathon might be an exception, is that you just start as fast as you can and hold on. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty good at that. Because I could hold on a bit, but I would finish and it would like awful during the race, but it was pretty easy to recuperate. But the marathon being 26 miles, there are so many different ways to run it. And having run 300 plus, I have run it, tried every single way that you can think of running 26 miles. And the only thing you learn, as you do, even in a 5K, you either pass people the first half or the second half. Mm-hmm. Never pass people the whole distance. So the marathon I loved because if you believe that principle, you start getting closer to running even splits or even running the last half faster than the first half. But it's difficult and you have to do a lot of them to really experiment. You know, like guys run 5Ks and they'll run them every weekend. So you can learn a lot doing 5Ks, but most people, a lot of people would only do the marathon once or twice a year. And that isn't really often enough to experiment with, because every marathon, if you only do a couple, means too much. Mm. So it's difficult to experiment on maybe getting halfway a little bit slower. And but anyways, to answer your question, the marathon obviously is my favorite distance because it's at my age, it's even more of an adventure than it used to be.
Yeah, I imagine, and I have a snowbird neighbor that is back up in Michigan now, but I think he's 85, 86, something like that. And about 3 or 4 years ago, he came, you know, got back down here in the fall, and you know, hey Bobby, how you doing? You know, how's the running going? He said, you know, I had to give up on the marathon. It's just too much for me at this point. It you know. The training is too difficult. The racing beats me up, and it's too much of recovery. So, you know, I'm sticking to the half marathon only. But it sounds like, at least so far, knock on wood, that it hasn't caught up to you yet, which is pretty fantastic.
Well, the first thing I look at now is how long they'll allow me to be out there before they pull the guards and the cones. And like right now, I'm in Oklahoma City for the marathon on Sunday, and they pull the plug at 6.5 hours. Now, some people say that's longer than my work day when I work, but it really isn't. So it's a whole different adventure for me now, but is still – a sport for me. But at 80, it's I know exactly what your friend's talking about. What you can't do, and Meb did that, if you think of him a couple of years ago, he cut back on his training just turning 40, mm-hmm. or about to turn 40. He couldn't train like he did at 30. And he still, what did he win? Boston, I think.
Right.
Didn't he win Boston a couple of years ago?
Yeah, he won Boston in 2014.
Yeah. And he did that training less than he previously used to put in. And it was mainly because your legs are older and you just can't train as much. And as long as you're willing to, be slower, mm-hmm. You keep on the sport. But that's why there, your friend that's 85, and there isn't many people that can continue that long because it's you get slower every time.
Right.
And if you think about, at your age, if you started getting, hopefully you're getting faster.
that's certainly the goal.
not every race, but you mm-hmm. can get still in better shape. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, I was just telling Carly about when I turned 70, I did a 5K and had and there was a couple of out and backs. It was a big 5K, a nice one. And well, it's in Ybor City. You wouldn't mm-hmm. know where that is. Mm-hmm. So great 5K and out and back. So you get to see everybody. And I didn't notice anybody my age ahead of me. So, or old enough to potentially mm-hmm. be my age. The only guy I saw was, and you might know the name, but Joe Bergazer from St. Pete. He trains people, and I thought he was still in his middle 60s. So when they were announcing the awards, they said 70 and over, I left my gang, and I said, I'll be back on that. So I'm walking towards the stage. I had run 24 minutes but didn't see anybody. And then they said, and 70 and over in 19 minutes, 20 seconds, Joe Bergazer. So the point I'm making is that then I talked to him later and he actually was slower, like at 68, and somehow got a second wind getting into his early 70s. And I hated hearing that because it's a great excuse for those of us to get older. Everybody just assumes you're going to be slower. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a comfort, not in the old days where they would expect you to continue to get faster. So, it's a humbling experience. Other sports, if you think about it, my son played soccer in college, and then when he got out, he joined a under 30 league soccer, mm-hmm. and then an over 30, and then he couldn't wait to get to the over 40 league. Running, you're out there with the best, like the people that had just done Boston. They were out there running with the best runners in the world, started a few minutes behind them. Mm-hmm. The activity they're running, they're engaged in, there's people all ages and different sexes. And so you're not like in a over 50 softball league mm-hmm. where everybody there is, over 50.
Right.
You're running, unfortunately. And even when you're training, your running group usually keeps getting, it doesn't get older. The younger guys get older,
right?
But you're running just with newer kids joining. Mm-hmm. And you get tired of saying, well, when I was 50, I was faster than you are at 30. I would never say that, but you get to a point where you've got to start thinking that and just say, I'm running at my age and same event they are. And so it can be humbling. And in 20 years, I'll talk to you.
Yes, sir. We'll set a date for 20 years from now, and you'll be at 500 marathons or something at that point, and I'll still be trying to catch up to you.
I'll actually be 100 years old. I just I'm so used to saying 20 years,
right?
That I probably shouldn't say that anymore.
Let's put it out there, and then you have, you know, then you have you know, if we have to do it in 15 or 10 or whatever, you know, no big deal. We'll back it up and have that that conversation. And yeah, there we go. So, you know, you mentioned that you know, kind of as Father Time creeps along, you know, for most cases, other than the select few who are still running 19-minute 5Ks in the 70-year-old plus age group, you kind of get slower. Was that a hard pill for you to swallow, or were you pretty okay with accepting that you know, you're not running what you were 30 years ago at this point in your life?
What the hardest thing for me now is I'm like the slowest one in our running community. Mm-hmm. We have in Bradenton have Saturday morning, Sunday morning, Tuesday evening group runs. Mm-hmm. And now we might have 30 people on a Tuesday, on last Tuesday night. And I just wait till everybody heads out, and I go after them. So I used to be running and talking with a whole lot of people. That doesn't happen now because there's nobody as slow as me, mm-hmm. even on the training run. So that's more humbling than a race. Mm-hmm. I don't mind a race, or I don't mind really running slowly. But what I miss is being able to I'm still a social runner because we still go for a sandwich and a beer after, mm-hmm. or breakfast in the morning runs. So that still is the social part of the activity for me. But I used to have a good time running with people and talking. A matter of fact, the Bradenton Running Club is a bit unique in that almost nobody listens to music. Mm. Group run. Because everybody talks, and when someone comes for the first time with a headset, we usually say something, mm-hmm. like, you notice you're the only one. And I'm usually a little sarcastic, being old school.
Right.
That wasn't around back in the old days. But to listen to music, I mean, you may have run into this. If you run like the country music or rock and roll or New York City, which has phenomenal New York City bands, mm-hmm. every other block, half of the people are listening to NPR or something, right. and just oblivious to, you know, running all over the place, have no idea there's 50,000 people there and they're whistling to a tune. Mm-hmm. We call that aided, running aided. So if someone, we make fun of them if they have finished a race, a half marathon or a marathon, and have listened to music the whole way, we say you ought to try one sometime on aided. Mm-hmm. In other words, just sweat and agonizing without something artificial to take your mind off of it. But that again is old school. Yeah, everybody gets sick of me. Some people used to wear a headset just so that I wouldn't talk to them. So they, you know, pull. If I say something, they'll pull it out of one ear and put it back in.
Right, right.
Always been a big part of the run for me, and that's kind of no longer.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a chance on race day to have a little bit more social aspect? I'm going to assume, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but are there maybe some more folks that are at your pace level on the races as opposed to in the normal runs back home?
They, back where I am, there is a bunch of people, mm-hmm. but they're normally younger, out of shape people who have decided to do a marathon and have not, I guess they didn't know it was 26 miles. So
and they probably all have their headphones in too, so they can't talk to you anyway.
Absolutely. They all have their headphones. Yeah. I don't. so that part of the marathon is left. Mm-hmm. But I used to use people. I don't think you should run 26 miles with someone that you brought. You want to use strangers where there's no obligation. I have, and you may have seen too, so many marathoners that had run, say, 20 miles together, and then one is trying to pull the other, and the other wants to walk. Well, obviously, if they had run separately, they may have ended up at 22 together. Mm-hmm. One maybe running the first part slower and the other faster. But I think it's such a mistake if you run with a buddy, even someone you train with, because no two people are going to do 26 miles. They may finish at the exact same time, mm-hmm. but they would each get there differently.
Right.
And I'm always advising people, don't run this with a buddy. It's kind of a waste, because somebody's going to take the other person out a little bit faster than they should, or slower. Mm-hmm. So it ought to be, I like to think of a race as being an individual experience that you learn something from. Mm-hmm. I've never treated that socially, but I used to run for a couple of years. I had a technique of, you know, I mentioned that I've tried all different techniques. One, I would run a very moderate 10 miles and let everybody go. Not everybody. Mm-hmm. Still pretty quick in those days. So I'd let everybody go, and then I would at mile 10 start picking it up. So I would run into people, and then I would engage them maybe in conversation and let them slow me down to the next water stop. And then I would take off again and just kind of reel people in. And because, you know, I couldn't accelerate the whole race, but I would accelerate to pick these people in, let them take me to the next water stop, and engage them in conversation. Mm-hmm. And then at the next water stop, I would take off again. And I had some really neat experiences doing that. A lot of marathons that have some terrain that doesn't work as well. But that's something that somebody might want to try if, in fact, they're convinced there's a wall at 20. Mm-hmm. Is put in a moderate 10 and then work your way. Because what a great feeling, if you think about it, Denny, passing so many people, because mm-hmm. you're fresh and you're catching them. You're using them. You know, they may be a few blocks ahead when you're around the corner. When you reel them in, let them take you to the next water stop, then you reel somebody else in. And it's almost like climbing a ladder.
Right.
It works well at where the terrain really isn't a factor.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, and you mentioned it just again as well, that, you know, because you've run so many races, you've had an opportunity to experiment with different things versus those that are running maybe one or two races a year. Like you said, it's such a big deal, and it's so focused, and you're maybe a little bit nervous for good reason to try to take a chance, because this might be your only chance for the next 8 months to try something out. On the flip side of that equation of the benefit of running so many marathons in a year, in a decade, and being able to try it out, is that idea of obviously recovery, staying healthy, things like that. How were you able to, over the 40 years of running, and with so many miles and so many marathons, stay healthy with running such a heavy, you know, quote unquote, heavy race schedule, you know, for most of those years?
It's almost the advantage of having a low expectation is you're not gearing up for one event. And so much pressure on, you know, I might not have mentioned, but I should have. I'm not electronically connected. Mm-hmm. I was back in an era where everybody was normal people. Everybody was faster than they are now, because I don't know how people do having negative reinforcement for 26 miles. It would be like running with someone who from the first inch was tired and was saying, oh, we're not to mile two yet, or we're not to. So that kind of guy you'd never want to run with, or girl. So I think if you've got on your wrist something which is you think you're at mile seven and you check it and you're at mile six and a half, or you think you're going, it's always telling you you're going too fast or too slow. Mm-hmm. The young people I run with now are just slower. They don't learn anything. They're taught by something on their wrist that apparently knows the temperature, the terrain, how you feel that day, and it tells you what pace you need to run. Mm-hmm. You run as hard as you can, knowing the distance. That's all running is. And we have made people so much slower, in my estimation, by losing that principle. So that's why I know a guy that's trying to qualify for Boston. I think he needs a 305. He just turned 30. I'm not sure what he needs, but he keeps missing it. He's got he's a fireman, mm-hmm. so he's in pretty good shape. 30 years old, just turned 30, wears a heart monitor, has the stuff on his wrist, and just can't do it. I mean, he should be running without anything on his wrist 3-hour marathons. I mean, he's that strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was never that strong. I mean, I'm kind of a 3.5 guy, could run like eights forever. Mm-hmm. So he's handicapped. Of course, he leaves the bar early because I'm on him all the time. Because even why would you need a heart monitor? First of all, as you would know from Florida, he's got a tan line, mm-hmm. because of the heart monitor. And he goes to the gym, but it's wasted because he's got a white line under his ample pecs. So he's an in-shape dude, but he got tied into the electric. He went to the running store, I always say, before he started to run. It's like before you ski, you'll go buy some skis and boots, mm-hmm. and then you'll ski. In my estimation, you don't really need to do that to run. That's what it used to be, mm-hmm. and people just ran. You think if you don't have anybody telling you on your wrist what you should do, or an iPhone on your arm, mm-hmm. my God. First of all, I wouldn't, besides a hat and a watch, which in the old days had five splits, Denny. So I was telling somebody the other day, don't let me ramble on, but what you would do, because the race started when the gun went off. Mm-hmm. So like at Boston in the old days with 8,000 people, or Marine Corps with 8,000 people. Now they're up to 20, 30, 40,000. But you were always like 2-3 minutes from the start. But the race started with the gun going off. So those of us with five splits on your watch, and it was only so that later after the race you could tell what you did. You'd always hit it at mile two. And then because mile one to two would always be maybe a 10-minute mile or something. Mm-hmm. And then you'd maybe hit it at halfway and then hit it at 20 and then at the finish or something. Anyways, running was far less complicated. And everybody used to be a whole lot faster than they are now. That's my own theory. Mm-hmm. So it's I just think running is a lot more difficult now. And then you've got the music, and you've got, rather than just running it old school, which would be without listening to music, mm-hmm. enjoy the pain. That's what you got to get used to, right, is fighting through it, especially a marathon. Mm-hmm. am I tired or can I
keep going?
Yes. Yeah. Keep going. Mm-hmm. So there's very few people like in my running community that goes back to before the electronics. So it's been around a while, quite a while. So I tell them that, and they don't see how you could possibly, without knowing somebody telling you what your pace is, because it doesn't make any difference to what your pace is. You've got to be running as hard as you can knowing the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn that by running a lot and doing a lot of races. And by the way, I don't have any arthritis in either knees. I had a meniscus operation. So that's an argument for pounding for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in some orthopedic guy had told me that's kind of the secret is rather than sitting around for 40 years and getting arthritis, if you're out there on the road, I think it's healthier for your knees. They may hurt a bit, but you might avoid arthritis.
Yeah, that was. There's so many things in there that I wanted to talk about, but since
I don't mind arguing either.
No. About the electronics and the watch thing, you know, I'm going to be guilty of talking out of both sides of my mouth because as we're, you know, talking, like I've got my watch on, you know, from my run this morning. I've got my heart strap on underneath my shirt. If I took it off, like you'd see my white strap around my chest as well. But it's one of those things where I feel like I like the data, especially for training. But on race day, I'm pretty much prone to turning things off and only having, you know, so that all I can see on my watch is the time because, and I've talked to others that have done this. I've had some of my athletes that I coach do this. I've seen it myself as well. It's exactly what you're saying. If you're not being told that, oh my gosh, I'm running too fast for whatever my goal is, you might just surprise yourself and come in, you know, if your goal is 2 hours in the half marathon, you're going to, if you're watching your watch, you're going to stay right at 9:06 pace. But if you don't, you might run 8:45s or 8:30s, feel fantastic, and come in at 2:50 or something like that.
Absolutely. And I think we set a goal, which maybe is a goal that people have always – you've heard people, well, I just want to break 4 hours, mm-hmm. like for the marathon, or 2.5 or 2 hours for the half marathon or something. And by setting a goal, not just running as hard as you can, knowing the distance, you set it perfectly, you're limiting yourself to what that goal is. And you've figured out what you need to do each mile to do that. That might not be you at all.
Mm-hmm.
You might be a lot faster. You might always fail, and maybe you're a lot slower. But find that out each Sunday or Saturday,
mm-hmm.
whenever the race is. And so I'm a strong arguer for on race day just doing the very, very best you can. Now, people underestimate. I mean, put everything into it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to surprise yourself. So I've got like a story that'll take 3 minutes, which if you've got it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I've done 12 Boston. So I had to wait till I turned 50 to qualify. Needed like a 3:20 and I did beat that. So I was able then after that year, they gave everybody, every age group, 5 more minutes.
Mm.
So 5 more minutes was fine for me. So I continued to do Boston's. So I'm driving alone from Rochester again, about a 6-hour drive all by myself doing Boston. One year, and again, I'm running a marathon almost a month, often with people, and occasionally I'll go off by myself and sleep in the car, get up in the morning and do the race. All my buddies qualified for Boston, and I had maybe 3-4 marathons into the year and had run a 3:35. And I'm saying, oh my God, I've got to do a 3:35, which normally would have been something I would have done a few times through the year at that age. So I start every month from that point going into April. It used to be you could sign up like a week before mm-hmm. Boston. I mean, they wanted to grow it from 8,000. And that's why they gave us each five more minutes, and they screwed around with it later, and just trying to, now they're trying to get 20,000. So I can't get my 335, because for the first time in, it would have been, I would have been like maybe 54 or something then. So I'd been running 14 years maybe, and just never having a goal. Mm-hmm. Just always qualifying for Boston a few times, but doing enough that you would never psyching myself out with a goal. So now all of a sudden I need a 335 because all my buddies are going. So I start doing what I'm saying don't do. Mm-hmm. And how can I get the, so I'm doing stuff differently than I used to do. So I finally gave up. I said, well, I just won't go this year. 335 is beyond me now at my age, and I was still young. So I'm doing Portland, Maine. And I remember a couple of guys ran up behind me maybe halfway and said, I like your pace, and we'll run with you. They'll run for a while with me. What do you think you'll do? And I said, geez, I'd like to do a 335. But I knew I wasn't going to do a 335. Make a long story short, you anticipate probably the end of this. I round the corner and the clock a couple of blocks away is 3:34. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to qualify for Boston without trying. And that to me was the proof that I had been correct those 14 years before that, is that other than just running as hard as I could on that day, knowing it's 26 miles, I started coming up with schemes to get the 335. So I got it once I relaxed and realized that I just wouldn't go that year, even though all my buddies were going. So I've got some evidence in my own life that a lot of the stuff that I've adopted over the years kind of work for me. But you do have to run as hard as you can. Mm-hmm. Knowing it's 26.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's the one side where maybe having the technology can help, and you know, it can be a crutch, it can be a problem. But I remember my first marathon, it's a terrible case of me completely underestimating what 26 miles was going to be like. I was ill prepared. But my plan was I'll just go out and, you know, hold about a 10 minute pace and just cruise it and, you know, think that was going to be what I was going to do. And I was running the Disney World race. So, you know, kind of, you know, a nice race, a lot of people. And I remember coming around the first mile and I was right about on pace. Things are good. And then you came through this tunnel of spectators and everybody's clapping and cheering. And I thought I was still just floating along, and I looked down at my watch and I was at like 7:30 pace. And so that was one of those instances where it was nice that I had that validation of like, you need to slow down or this is going to be, and ended up being a pretty tough finish anyway, you know, first marathon, not knowing what to expect, but it would have been really tough had I not maybe backed off a little bit and had that external feedback. So, you know, talking about it both sides of my mouth, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but you know, I think it's something that most runners would benefit from at least trying. Try running a race without your watch or with nothing but the time showing. And like you said, 3:35, you had no expectation of it, and boom, it happens. Like, you don't have that expectation. You might surprise yourself once in a while.
Well, the a lot of my friends, like you did at Disney, say they wear it to slow them down. Mm-hmm. Not to, well, I'm not running fast enough. These are people that often have had bad experiences going out too fast, and do say the positive thing about it. It helps you know that, especially if you've run a lot, if you've run a bunch of races, then you know you do know about what you're capable of, mm-hmm. and you know you may not if you go out too quick and don't realize it, you've made a mistake that you're not going to recoup. So there is an argument for that. I would my argument then would be that you probably would have known that, that you, when you got through the, that you would have instinctively, well, geez, I think I ran a little bit harder than I should. Right. I don't know exactly how much harder, which the watch might help you with, but you would know. My thing is that most of the uses of it give you negative reinforcement. Mm-hmm. Like I'm either not to 6 miles yet, or I'm running too fast or too slow. When, like you made a great point in that, you don't, if you always are connected up, you don't really know how fast you can run. Mm-hmm. You've got to like really fail, you know, get halfway too quick, and then 13 miserable miles of I argue for finding that out over a long period of time, making a lot of mistakes. And I used to run pretty good marathons just hammering it to 20 or 22 or something, and then
and just hold on,
almost walking in, but get there quickly enough that they weren't fun experiences. And that's what I learned. So I learned from those miserable experiences. And there's only one guy that I ever ran into. We all went to Jacksonville, and it was his first marathon, but he was been running forever and has done longer crazy things like run from coast to coast for charity. But he could run pretty fast, 5 and 10K in half marathon, but never done a marathon before. So he said, well, I'm just going to jog through this, and I want to do a 3.5. And it would be a jog for him. He's a pretty fast dude and has done distance stuff, just never run an official marathon. So he ended up by missing it by, I think, 10 minutes. So we're at Starbucks afterwards. So I said to Nels, was his name. I said, Nels, what would you do differently? He wasn't heartbroken that he had missed the time by 10 minutes because he wasn't connected up anyways, but it just... And he said, I would have gotten halfway slower. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever says that. If you'd be interested to hear reactions you've had from different people who haven't met what they just thought they would do and what their reaction would be. A lot of people say, well, I didn't get halfway quickly enough. But, but he, I thought, nailed it when he said, I just, you know, if I wanted to run the 8-minute average, an 8-minute pace, I just got halfway too quick. And very few people are able to analyze it that way. You always look at different portions of the race you could have run faster. Where he, I thought, wisely realized the part of the race that he ran too quickly. Mm-hmm. And that was the first half.
Yeah, I think that idea of the negative split is probably the best way to run your best long distance race. The where people get in trouble, and I'm guilty of this too, is scary to think that in this first half, while I'm feeling good, I need to really ease off a bit to try to save something, because what happens if I don't feel good at mile 22 or whatever? So it's one of those things that for me, it's all the logical in the world to run comfortably the first half or the first 15 miles and then try to, you know, pick it up a bit. But boy, it's a scary proposition when you've got that time goal to think that you're giving up time purposefully early and trusting your training enough that you're going to be able to make it up after the fact. Even though I've seen other people do it, I've heard the stories, boy, it's just a scary, scary thought to do. But I think your friend was right. And I think that's the probably the best way to do it when you have a set time goal like that.
Because the reaction is always because we've all done it. I've got some minutes in the bank, right? So that knowing that sometime at the end I'm going to need that stuff in the bank. But then again, if you are, you know, you've run fast enough so that you can slow down a bit at the end. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's you know, believe me, I always tried the negative because I'd rather pass people at the end. Mm-hmm. And I did realize that early in my marathon career is that I would rather pass people the second half than the first half. But like you said, you could feel just as bad doing it either way.
Right.
So by wasting, and then you'd say, geez, I wasted that. I felt so good the first half. Well, then what you would do, though, I'm thinking, Danny, you would then the next race, you would pick it up gradually, but still have in mind that you want to, when you get to 13, 14, you want to still have something left.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're constantly thinking that, which I used to be able to, I'm feeling good now and I'm doing, but I want to, you know, if you're thinking already for the last few miles during the race, just the mental exercise of it somehow or sometimes kind of pulls you through. You might get a kick out of this. So I'm running Jacksonville one year and I run up behind this young, lean, tall dude and I go by him and it wasn't halfway. Maybe mile 10. And so he picks it up, seeing that I'm an older guy and he certainly should be running. So he starts running with me. So he said, how many of you run? And of course, I tell you, those days, probably 200 something. So he was impressed. And then he said, what do you think you'll do today? And I said, well, I usually come in, like 3.5, maybe something like that. So I said, how about you? And he said, well, I just want to, I want to come in like at 4. So I said, you're running too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Saying so to finish at 4. I said, we're doing 8s and you should be running closer to 9s. Cause sometimes you pay for it at the end. So he said, I just want to get to 20 as quickly as I can. And then I know there's a wall and that I'm going to kind of limp in. So he had already established with me how many marathons I had run. And I said, the wall is at 23. There is a wall at 20. That's something that Runner's World publishes and it's not for you. There's a wall at 23 and it'll knock your socks off. So I wait for him at the finish. He hit the wall at 23. That's what I was hoping would happen, just so that I could tell you that story. But it's the absolute truth. He hit a wall at 23 because talking to someone that had done so many, as we established during our run, that he then forgot about 20.
Mm-hmm.
And knew he was going to hit something at 23. He said he was like a cement wall at 23. Now, he would have hit that same wall at 20 if he didn't believe that I had run more marathons than the guys that wrote about it in Runner's World.
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, so much of it is mental. That wall can be any place you want it to be. And often, if you're exhausted, you're looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can tell your buds, boy, I hit the wall at 20 or I hit the wall at 22 and I just couldn't go on. And everybody said, oh, yeah, boy, that wall at 20 or something. it's all up here.
Yeah, I agree with that. Gosh, there's so many things that I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So I'm certainly going to have to make the trip and maybe do an in-person one of these at some point, maybe sooner rather than later, since for those that, I don't know if we've established this, but we only live about an hour and 15 minutes apart, something like that.
What sort of runs do you do?
As far as races go, I'm pretty, like, I've run like one race in the last year and a half or something like that. We've got a young daughter, a 3-year-old. She'll be 4 in a couple of months. So it's been, the last few years have been not scheduling much for races, and hopefully picking that up in a few years now that she's obviously getting old enough that travel is a little bit easier, and you know, sending her to the grandparents for the weekend is a lot less of a hassle than when she's a still infant size. So hoping to run some more races coming up. But back to one thing is, as we're going to kind of get close to wrapping this thing up, and I'm not asking for a quick answer. We can take this as long as we want. But like I said, we're not going to keep going all day because I know you've got a race to be ready for tomorrow or in a couple of days as we're recording this. But I'd be curious to know, as we're wrapping up today, Chuck, you've mentioned a couple of things with the headphones, with the watches and the connectivity and things like that, that, you know, weren't in place when you started running and, maybe are a bit pet peevish or just things that you don't appreciate about something that's so common in the running community these days. Is there something that is the opposite of that? Something that, nowadays whatever it is, it could be a multitude of things, but things that you really like now or have really grown to, creature comforts or runner comforts that in the last 10 years you're like, God, I wish that we had this back in the 80s when I started running marathons that we do have now that you appreciate some of the advances that have happened in our sport.
It would be the carpet. Again, you could be back like a mile. Wouldn't be a mile, but a whole lot of blocks, like at the Marine Corps in Boston. And when the cannon went off, that's the beginning of the race. Mm-hmm. So you're already, by the time you get to the start, 2 to 4 minutes behind.
Oh, right.
That's right. So I love the fact that I don't press start my watch until till you pass the carpet. Like at Oklahoma City, it's a big race. So it'll take me maybe even 10 minutes to walk down to the carpet. Mm-hmm. And then I started. So that's kind of neat. To me, that would be the major improvement so enthusiastically for running unaided. Learning something every single race about yourself. Not that I couldn't keep up with the watch or the, I'm not sure what, but I now you'll have an individual come by you and you think they're running with someone and their phone is talking to them.
So, right.
So I hate to sound like an old fogey, but it's just phenomenal. And then occasionally there'll be someone talking on the phone the whole way. Mm-hmm. And not even holding it, but having something in their ear, and they go by you and they're talking. And then, you see that in the airport all the time, and then you realize he's got the headset. And, mm-hmm. And you may have too. I've run behind people that get calls. Mm-hmm. I'll say, well, I'm 10 miles into the Jacksonville Marathon, the first time I saw it, I was doing Chicago, and we're like a mile from the finish, and a guy whips out his phone. This was before the arm thing. He had a phone in his back pocket or something, and he calls his wife and said, I'll be coming in the finish of Chicago, which, as you know, is a big race, mm-hmm. coming in for the photograph on the left-hand side. So he's telling his wife to get the camera and watch him. And I thought that was kind of amazing. But he was a real runner.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going along a pretty good clip, but he whipped it out and actually used the phone to call somebody. But now I think there's so many apps, isn't there, on the phone that it'll be your running buddy, I think.
It can be. You can set that up for sure.
I know. So I'm just other than the timing now is so phenomenal from what it used to be. You used to mail into Boston a certificate.
Right.
You'd make a copy of it or you'd fold it up in an envelope and mail it in. In Chicago, for Boston, you might not realize in the olden days, you could actually send in your time. It gave you the 59 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you put in there, it was a windy day.
They'd cut you slack for that?
You might get in.
Huh.
Right. And as I said, a couple of weeks before Boston, you could just get in. I only say that to people now that know how difficult it is to the mailing, and you're not sure. We had some people that thought they qualified, but once they went in, some younger people, they went back and they were a couple of seconds off because you got to run faster than your qualifying time now, which seems kind of crazy to me. Why don't you just change the time? But it just seems like make a little more difficult for them. But these people thought they had qualified. They had beaten their time by 3-4 minutes and thought for sure they were in, and I think had a room, and then got the notice that you're no longer in. So
That's complicated. That would be as people that listen to the show regularly know that qualifying and running Boston is one of my big goals, and boy, that would be it'd be bad enough to hit the BQ time but know that you didn't beat it by enough so you couldn't get in. But boy, at the last minute like that, to think that you were good, travel already, arrangements, hotel, the whole nine, and now, yoink, sorry, you're not. Oof, that would be that'd be terrible.
The other thing about Boston, and that's true, I think, even today, is I remember that when they wouldn't let a woman run it, but they've always been bandit friendly. And they're lining up behind the last group, there'll be really good runners who only, because they live in the area, only run Boston every year, never officially. So, and people will say, well, I want to qualify. Well, that would be good. But the experience of running Boston is kind of cool. You know, when you've watched it on TV and, you know, you get to 16 and then the hills start. So you can run it as a bandit and finish and even take a medal. Nobody even keeps a medal from you. You line up behind everybody else, but nobody seems to mind at Boston, even before the carpet. I remember a guy finishing front of me without it, when it used to be chutes.
Right.
It used to have chutes. So that was more complicated because they're clicking off every minute. So if you've got a guy without a number, somebody clicked it for him. So throw everybody, the thousands of people after that off. But Boston just had a technique. They used to rip your bottom part of your number off. That's what that's for. And then they put it on a ring. And they just had a batch of blank ones that if someone came through that didn't have a number, you just put a blank one on. But I was just going to say, nothing wrong with running Boston as a bandit. Now, other races, I wouldn't say that because you shouldn't and they don't like it. But Boston, for some reason, is very tolerant of guys to do it. And you can, because a lot of guys, there's guys you'll say, I mean, how many Bostons you run? Well, I live in the area, I've run 10 Bostons. Where'd you qualify? Never qualified, just do Boston.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, it's something that learn something new every day. I definitely didn't know that. And that would be, that could be an interesting story to find some bandit runners that you know, bring them on and chat with them. That would be an all right thing down the line too.
I'm trying to think of how you'd find them, but you're right. No, absolutely.
Wow, this with you know, the connectivity of the running community that maybe you're not the biggest fan of, but now we're putting it out there. People are hearing. Guys, if you know anybody who's bandited Boston, get them in touch with me. I'd love to have that conversation on the show at some point.
Well, it is easier now. I knew a guy back in Rochester before the carpets that was trying to cheat and get into Boston. There'd be different races where he, like bow tie races where you can come back to start. He'd do the first half and then just wait around for the time he needed and then just finish.
Because
you could do that because without the carpets you can put all through the race. You can follow guys for 5Ks and 10Ks and 30Ks and then the marathon. But before the carpet, you could cheat. The only thing now is it's almost easier to cheat. I keep thinking of this guy. If he was today, he would have just given somebody else
the bib,
his number. So easy to cheat. I'm not saying why anybody would want to do that. I'd rather run it as a bandit than actually convince people I did my time and I didn't, but it is easier to cheat now with a carpet. Just give that information to someone faster than you. So
as long as you can find a willing participant to do the willing partner, you're good to go.
Yeah. Oh, there'd be a million of them. Well, mm-hmm. you could pay a guy to do it.
Right. Right. Well, anyway, Chuck, I like I said earlier, I feel like we could keep going, but at some point we'll go so long that people will stop listening, and we don't want that to happen. So
we'll go ahead
and put a bow on this one today, but certainly hope that we can circle back up and do another one in person at some point. But once again, guys, disruns.com/573 is the link to the show notes. If you want to see some photos of Chuck and that type of thing, that'll be there. And we don't have anything to link to, so there won't be any links there to find, but that's all good and well anyway. So Chuck, thank you for taking the time today. I certainly appreciate it. Have a great race in a couple of days, which by the time this publishes, that race will already be in your rearview mirror. You probably have 3 or 4 other races under your belt by then as well, but keep running, keep doing your thing, and like I said, I'm looking forward to the time that we can get together and have another chat at some point in the not too distant future.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Chuck and myself, and as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was something that we talked about that stuck in your mind a little bit, or made you raise your eyebrows, or made you stop and think, or whatever it was? What was something that stood out to you from some of the great stories, obviously, that Chuck had to tell, and some of the opinions that he shared as well? For me, it really came down to the idea, and we touched on it a little bit during the episode as well, but the idea that it's a good thing to try something new on race day, because as much as you try something in your training runs, it's not the same experience, and it flies so counter to the adage, the truism, if you will, that you should never do anything new on race day. That everything that you do on race day, from what you wear to what you eat to your fueling and hydration strategies to your mantras, all of those types of things should be things that are already in place, that you've already tried, tested. You know, they work for you, and that way, you know, it's one less variable that you have to control on race day. But like Chuck said, and I think it was genius, and obviously one of those things that you learn from 40 years of racing and competing, there's just something about race day that's different than, you know, waking up at the pre-crack of dawn to get your miles in on a Saturday morning. You know, that the excitement, the enthusiasm, maybe the will to push yourself a little bit farther, a little bit harder, it's there on race day that's not there, at least for me. Maybe y'all are probably better than me, but it's not there for me on my training runs sometimes. But on race day, I always can find an extra gear. I can always dig a little bit deeper. So with that in mind, sometimes you got to be willing to try something. And that can be a scary thought, especially if you're the type of person that only runs one or two races a year, or at least one or two big races a year. But it might be worth it. It might be worth it. And if your plan, which is my plan, is to continue to run for the next 10, 20, 30 years, even if you quote unquote only have one or two races a year that you're running. And so it seems like, God, I don't want to try something new. Why not? When you multiply that out by 10, 20, 30 more years, you've got a lot of races to come. And so by trying something new on race day, by doing a little race day experiment, you might learn something that will make the next 10, 20, 30 years of running that much more successful. It might help you break through a limiting belief or you know, move to the next level of your running or try, you know, learn that something doesn't work. It might blow up on your face. You go, all right, well, won't try this in the future, but at least then you know. And you won't know until you try it. So I just thought that was a pearl, one of many pearls that Chuck shared today. And again, one of those things that you can learn after you've been in the sport for, you know, longer than some of us have been alive, which Chuck has been. So that was my takeaway. What about you? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And as always, you can head over to the show notes of this episode or any episode and leave your thoughts, feedbacks, takeaways there as well. Once again, DizRuns.com/573 for this episode. And while you're there, you can check out the About Me page, too, if you haven't, again, been to the website in a while. You can see the great work that Ellen does with the show notes. You can see some of the pages that are slowly but surely starting to get updated and come around from me as well, trying to knock off one every week or so. And eventually I'll get them all finished, and I'll have to start back at the beginning and update everything again. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. But again, DizRuns.com/about if you want to check out the About Me page. DizRuns.com/573 to see some photos of Chuck and the show notes for today's episode. So with that, we'll officially put a bow on this thing. Once again, like I said at the beginning, thanks for listening. And thank you for those that actually stick around to the very, very end. I really appreciate that extra little bit of dedication because, let's be honest, the last 30 seconds is usually just me flubbling around with my words. But appreciate y'all listening all the way to the end. Have a great rest of your day, and certainly looking forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, guys.